This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Temps.
I'm Danny Hogan.
Each Thursday, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. With special guests and stats you can trust, here we go. This week, we're recording our ongoing coverage of the COVID-19 pandemic. So first off, we should talk a little bit about the current state of affairs in the UK. We continue to be under lockdown style measures, and it's just been announced last week that those will continue. So we'd had our first 3-week review, and UK law requires there to be a review every 3 weeks. The first one, the outcome was that they are going to continue, but we don't yet have a date on how long that'll be for. And so I thought maybe we should mention my latest predictions. I know a lot of the things that I've thought are going to happen have come true, and I'm hearing from some listeners they're finding that helpful to prepare. I'm certainly trying to look forward and estimate as best I can what's going to happen next as a way to mentally prepare and figure out what the steps are, both in terms of my mental health and self-care and all the things I need to do to stay at my best, but also in terms of the more logistical side. You know, what do I need to do financially? What do I need to do in terms of planning, shopping, and these kind of things? So my current prediction would be that this is going to last for at least the next 2 months, this style of lockdown measures. That being said, I think they could change, but I don't think they're going to be altogether lifted for at least the next 2 months.
Really?
Yeah, do you think that's fair?
I do, but then the last couple of days, different countries seem to be lifting different lockdown statuses, basically. And it made me think, does that start to put the pressure on us? We start now thinking, oh, maybe we'll only be a couple of weeks, or they'll start to let, you know, different people, different groups of people out at different times. Somebody mentioned about schools going back in 3 or 4 weeks, and others are like, no way. But China have obviously lifted their lockdown, and I feel like it's all been a little bit what other countries are doing, what should we do, what everybody's comparing with each other. And it made me think, oh, does that mean that we'll start being able to go out soon?
It's a good point, because that's one of the things we're talking about later as our potential positive, that there does seem to be a more united approach between different countries in a way we're just not used to seeing. So you're right. The main one, of course, is China, that for Wuhan and certain areas that were worst affected, much of the lockdown is being lifted. It could give you an idea of how long it takes to suppress this. But it's tricky because they're not that comparable. The spread and the speed was quite different in China than it has been here. We've already passed their number of cases, but also our spread is continuing to grow. So with China, it was between 2 to 3 months that lockdown was happening for the worst affected areas. And so maybe that's why I'm leaning towards predicting a similar length here. But of course, it may be longer. And we're still learning how much the current measures are affecting spread. So I don't mention that prediction in a way to kind of fearmonger at all, but instead I find it helpful to try and look ahead and predict as best I can, just to feel that I'm prepared and I have an idea of what to expect. Mm-hmm. But of course, it's constantly developing. And in fact, our lockdown measures could get more stringent, though that is something we have power of, providing people are still following the advice and not being tempted by sunny weather to break the rules. Then I think that's the best way for our measures not to be extended.
Absolutely. And it is contradictory, because one day it's telling you how many victims there have been. And then on the other hand, we've got conversations about, you know, coming out of lockdown. Just feels like, let's just put that aside for a bit as well. And, you know, it still feels such a delicate situation to think about coming out of lockdown, you know, or could it be 2 weeks? It might be 3 weeks, could it be 6 weeks? I think 2 months is a fair prediction, and one that actually feels more comfortable.
Yeah, well, because from a mental health point of view, if nothing else, are you okay, Daniel?
I am okay, but as normal, another child has walked into our recording. Say her quick weekly hello to Bobby. And now she's falling on the floor and hiding. You can wait.
Oh.
You
don't need-
And that's the big one. So that's strange. Maybe she's just a bit too cool. The little one comes up, doesn't she, and jumps on me. She's like, hi, Bobby. But the big one's like, I'm just having a nosy, but I'm not really that interested in speaking. So she's gone now. We're in the clear. They've both been in. They've done their bit. I'm sure we're in the clear for the next hour for the recording.
They've checked on you. You're still there.
Yeah, still here. They're not used to not seeing me for 10 minutes, let alone 3 hours.
So, yeah, to get slightly back to what we were talking about, I think we're all still adjusting. And so certainly from a mental health perspective, it would make a lot more sense for these measures to continue until we're really sure that they're having an effect and that the cases are being crushed as much as possible, that growth is being truly reversed, so that we can safely start to lift the measures and hopefully slowly lift them as well, rather than what I would fear happening is they could get lifted too quickly and then they'll have to very quickly be put back in place. And then we're all going to really struggle
with that adjustment more than if we'd not come out in the first place.
Yeah, in many ways, I'm quite comfortable to sit back, get used to my new routine.
Sorry, Bob, I'll just say on that point, my sister who lives in Tenerife, they were given a couple of weeks ago a date, which is at the end of April, as a minimum. That you won't be coming out. I mean, they're under really strict, bless that little island, but they're under really strict lockdown measures. She can't just go for a walk. They have to go to the shop and come home. There's no exercise, wandering around or anything like that. So, but they were given a date and I felt that that worked quite well because they know that that date wasn't certain, but to be given a date to say, just so that you all know, this lockdown will not come, you know, you'll not be out of lockdown. What unlocked? Feels weird.
Let out.
Yeah, you won't be let out, released until, let's say, the 25th of April. And I think from a mental health point of view, especially, it's really quite helpful.
I guess because I'd been following things quite closely, I knew there was the 3-week in review coming up. And so when the decision was made that the lockdown would continue, I was comfortable with that because I expected that to be the decision. And I guess, made my peace with it mentally, rather than me sitting around thinking, will they, won't they? And strangely in all of it, it's a time when parts of the UK broke rank because Scotland and Wales both announced that the lockdown would continue before Westminster announced it for the UK as a whole.
Yeah.
So that it's very strange. And I think in any other time, there'd be an outcry about that. But I think right now that was the right thing to do, that as soon as they were certain which way it was going to go, they just let their respective countries have the information rather than hold off for a decision that it sounds like had already been made.
Yeah.
And so we'll move on to our 2 weekly stats we look at every time. Again, these are both from Worldometers. And the first one I'll read is that of the current active COVID-19 cases, only 4% of them are classed as serious or critical. So that has actually gone down 1%. Bad.
Yeah.
And I've been hearing from listeners this week who have mentioned how it's a stat they're finding reassuring that whilst everything else is changing, the fact that for the last 3 weeks, it's been 5%. I'm really pleased that now I've got the good news of it going down 1%.
Yeah, that's brilliant. It really has been a great stat, actually. I've had the same feedback. It's been a really comforting stat, to be fair, amidst all the horror stories and the sadness.
Yeah, it's not to take away the fact that this is such a threat, but on an individual basis, if we get it, the percentage chance it's going to be serious or critical is still very low. And then the other stat we come to every week, another one you won't really hear on the news, which is the number of cases where people have recovered. So again, these are just confirmed cases, so they'll actually be far more often the people that have mild symptoms or weren't diagnosed for other reasons. So that now stands globally as 435,185 as of recording this on Monday. So that has gone up, off the top of my head, at least 160,000 more recovered cases since we read it out last week.
Great. Thanks to our amazing NHS and carers and people all over the place looking after everybody.
And also other people's health systems, with that being a global stat, but no, definitely. And I'm glad you mentioned the NHS, actually, because that transitions quite well into the next thing I wanted to mention, which is a somewhat ranted, scripted thing. I wanted to get this right. As listeners know, we are not attempting to replace news services here. We are.
However, I am going to have a rant, so listen.
I mean, people can skip it. People are very entitled to their free thing. I'll explain why it's relevant. Whilst we mostly stay clear of politics here on the podcast, given that we talked about increasing appreciation for key workers only last week, it seemed relevant to highlight that message is increasingly inconsistent in government, in particular around the shortage of personal protective equipment. Here is a brief piece that I've prepared. The Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, has apologised after stating on Friday that there is enough personal protective equipment, providing it is used correctly, implying that it is the fault of frontline staff for using it recklessly, despite providing no evidence that that is true. On the same day, he also appealed to businesses in the daily briefing to help provide more PPE, a clear sign to me that supplies are not, in fact, sufficient. He also failed to take ownership of the risk this was subjecting medical professionals to by stating the following in an interview.
The work is going on to establish whether they caught coronavirus in the line of duty whilst at work, or whether, like so many other people in the rest of their lives, it's obviously quite difficult to work that out.
But research by the British Medical Association shows more than half of doctors working in high-risk environments said they were short of face masks or had none available.
The Home Secretary, Priti Patel, when asked to apologise for the lack of PPE, said in the daily briefing on Saturday,
"I'm sorry if people feel that there have been failings. I'll be very, very clear about that. But at the same time, we are in an unprecedented global health pandemic right now."
There is no if about it, as the shortage of personal protective equipment has been highlighted by the World Health Organization, British Medical Association, and a huge number of medical professionals. I'm also very cynical of any apology that is immediately followed by the word but, particularly when this seems to imply that those lives lost are less significant in a global context. As Home Secretary, the safety of her citizens should be her number one priority. Of course, the British public understand that there are challenges. However, ownership should still be taken over these failings. The alternative appears to be passing the blame to the very people that are most at risk of losing their lives, if not provided with proper protection. The last thing that would make sense is that they are wasting it. Meanwhile, to end on a more positive note, it has been great to see our Prime Minister Boris Johnson leaving hospital and praising the medical staff by name, who he credits with saving his life. We sincerely hope that this leads him to better funding the NHS going forward. Until then, we hope he makes a speedy recovery back to full health. So yeah, that's my little piece. I think it is important to put a pin in certain approaches governments are taking, particularly our own, and when trying to best relate to some of the decisions that are being made, some of it doesn't quite make sense, and I think it's fair to acknowledge that.
No, I think you're absolutely right in the way that you've expressed it, and I agree with you, and we're not a political podcast. However, I think it was just the naivety and the use of language, really, to make a comment at the time like this about anybody not using their equipment properly. PPE is such a highly sensitive subject, and they're not just disregarding them and thinking, oh, it doesn't matter, they're 10 a penny. Of course they're not. There's people all over the place that are trying to give care and support that haven't got PPE and are still out there giving it without it. So it's outrageous to use such language without, as you said, evidence. Quite upsetting, really.
Yeah, I think it was worth mentioning, particularly when we've talked so much about how much the NHS is being appreciated right now. It makes sense for us to demand that at all levels, really. What the listeners won't know is that we do sometimes talk about things and end up cropping it out because we're not here to try and pick sides. Instead, we're here to destigmatise mental health for everyone. So we're really pushing for a very universal cause here on the podcast that surpasses politics, ideals, religion, any factor in which you might see the world. You should not be stigmatised against for mental illness or symptoms, no matter what.
Hear, hear.
Yeah, I guess that's what I'll say about that.
Yeah.
And one last thing I'll mention is, in relation to Boris Johnson, that positive, that he is really showing an honest appreciation. And he even mentioned, you know, the backgrounds of those that cared for him and how intensely they kept watch for, at one point, 48 hours solidly. He was watched over by one of two nurses, both of whom he mentioned having backgrounds outside of the UK. And that makes me very proud. And it makes me proud of doctors in my family who have come over here from Ireland. That makes me feel very proud, and that hits very close to home. As an example of how, in some ways, the NHS is incredibly global in who makes it up, that it's a service for this nation, but it's supported by people of nations all over the world. And I think that's an incredible achievement. People will travel to work in it and be a part of it. And I have no doubt that medical professionals are doing their very best in what is truly trying circumstances. In that, I totally agree with him that the NHS saved his life.
Absolutely. I think that is so true. And you're right. There's not really much more to be said about that. I felt that the way that Boris has announced people by name and we know where they're from, it's quite political in itself. And even the way then that Boris as a leader has had to be real, and his fiancée Carrie, some of her tweets and things that she said really brought back that notion of, you know, they are a man and a woman just as you and I are. There's nothing between any of us. We're all just humans and in it together, and this hierarchy and authority and all that bullshit, we can start looking past that and help people come together and heal, and in, you know, mental health in all different ways. But I'll get off of that and talk on about that all day. So well said, Bobby. I think that was a brilliant introduction to our episode.
Oh, we're not quite done.
No.
Sorry. Actually links in really well to our potential positive this week, which is that the world, and I think our country in particular, feels more united than ever. That for many people, Boris will be the first person that they know of, the first person they know by name that has been seriously ill from COVID-19. And I think that's really helped a lot of people take this seriously. It certainly shook me somewhat to see within such a short space of time, he'd gone from being at the daily briefings to then being in intensive care.
I know.
So I'm so glad that he has recovered so well so far. So I really hope you're right that we do come out of this all feeling a little bit more connected, having this reminder of our actions really do affect people, because it's not just about lockdown and staying inside to save lives and reduce transmission. Every time we go outside, we affect people with our attitude. We do interact with others. This is a time to appreciate the NHS. This is a time to appreciate key workers, supermarket staff, people in care, yeah. Just everyone across the board that's doing their bit. And for many of us, doing our bit is staying at home. So every person is worthy of appreciation right now for contributing. That's actually not different to normal.
Absolutely. Well, loads of this isn't different to normal, actually. I was thinking the same thing the other day. A lot that we talk about, a lot of things actually that we're saying what, you know, that people should be doing, and advice that's being given left, right and centre, and all exactly what you've just said then, appreciation, but none of it should be any different to normal. Let's just hope it highlights it. That's the point, isn't it?
Yeah. So I really hope that does continue, and the level of respect we seem to be showing each other continues after this, and we're all more mindful of each other.
Yeah.
And along that line, I wanted to read an article that I found really moving, incredibly well written, that's quite a nice sign of countries thinking of each other in these times. So this article has been published all over the world. In this country, it was published in The Guardian, and I'll put a link to that in the episode description. I'm just going to read an abridged version of it. The acclaimed Italian novelist Francesca Melandri, who has been under lockdown in Rome for almost 3 weeks due to the COVID-19 outbreak, has written a letter to fellow Europeans from your future, laying out a range of emotions people are likely to go through over the coming weeks. And so this is my abridged reading of it. I am writing to you from Italy, which means I am writing from your future. We are now where you will be in a few days. The epidemic charts show us all entwined in a parallel dance. Just like Wuhan was a few weeks ahead of us, we watched you all as you behaved just like we did. You hold the same arguments we did until a short time ago, between those who say, it's only flu, why all the fuss, and those who have already understood. As we watch you from here, from your future, we know that many of you, as you were told to lock yourselves up in your homes, quoted Orwell, some even Hobbes, but soon you'll be too busy for that. First of all, you'll eat, not least because it will be one of the few things you can still do. You'll find dozens of social networking groups with tutorials on how to spend your time in fruitful ways. You will join all of them, then ignore them completely after a few days. You'll pull apocalyptic literature out of your bookshelves, but will soon find you don't really feel like reading any of it. You'll eat again. You will not sleep. You will ask yourself what is happening to democracy. You'll have an unstoppable social life on Messenger, WhatsApp, Skype, Zoom. You'll miss your adult children like never before. The realization that you have no idea when you will ever see them again will hit you like a punch in the chest. Old resentments and fallings out will seem irrelevant. You will call people you had sworn to never speak to again, so as to ask them, how are you doing? Many women will be beaten in their homes. You will wonder what is happening to all those who can't stay home because they don't have one. You will feel vulnerable when going out shopping in the deserted streets, especially if you are a woman. You will ask yourself if this is how societies collapse. Does it really happen so fast? You'll block out these thoughts, and when you get back home, you'll eat again. You'll put on weight. You'll look online for fitness training. You'll laugh a lot. You'll flaunt a gallus humour you never knew you had before. Even people who have always taken everything dead seriously will contemplate the absurdity of life, of the universe, and of it all. You will count all the things you do not need. The true nature of people around you will be revealed in total clarity. You will have confirmations and surprises. Those who invite you to see all this mess as an opportunity for planetary renewal will help you put things in a larger perspective. You will also find them terribly annoying. Nice, the planet is breathing better because of the halved CO2 emissions. But how will you pay your bills next month? You will not understand if witnessing the birth of a new world is more grandiose or a miserable affair. When you saw us singing opera from our balconies, you thought, oh, those Italians. But we know now you will sing uplifting songs too. And when you blast I Will Survive from your windows, we'll watch you and nod, just like the people of Wuhan, who sung from their windows in February, nodded whilst watching us. Many children will be conceived. Your children will be schooled online. There'll be horrible nuisances. They'll give you joy. Elderly people will disobey you like rowdy teenagers. You'll have to fight with them in order to forbid them from going out. You will be told that society is united in a communal effort, that you are all in the same boat. It will be true. This experience will change for good how you perceive yourself as an individual part of a larger whole. Class, however, will make all the difference. Being locked up in a house with a pretty garden or in an overcrowded housing project will not be the same. Nor is being able to keep on working from your home or seeing your job disappear. That boat in which you'll be sailing in order to defeat the epidemic will not look the same to everyone. Nor is it actually the same for everyone. It never was. At some point, you'll realise it's tough. You will be afraid. You will share your fear with your dear ones, or you will keep it to yourself so as not to burden them with it too. You will eat again. We're in Italy, and this is what we know about your future. But it's just a small-scale fortune-telling. If we turn our gaze to the more distant future, the future which is unknown both to you and to us, we can only tell you this. When all of this is over, the world won't be the same. So I definitely encourage you listeners to check out the full article, which I've linked in the episode description. I've been looking at that article for a few weeks. It's something that every time I read it, it's more moving and more poetic. And maybe that's because more of it is truer and realer than ever.
Absolutely. I love that. You're right. That's a great article. The way it's written, the content, everything about it really is moving and so true in so many points. The fact that it's talking about, you know, your future, like a letter from your future, and he's got it down, hasn't he, in every way.
Oh, women can be writers too, Danielle.
I thought you'd said he at the beginning of the thing. And don't put that on me.
Pete, leave it in. Put it on her.
Yeah, no, don't. No, it's fine. I can own Bobby's criticism. No, I really want to pass that around.
It's really moving, but it's poetic in its truth. And I'm someone that loves poetry, and I guess that's a lot of the appeal of it for me. Even the saddest poetry gives you some kind of condolence because it's accurate. You know, when it most emotionally hits home, it's also reassuringly congruent.
Absolutely.
So to round up on that, that's, as mentioned a few times in the article there, the potential positive. We want to look at how things won't be the same going forward. We're already having to think as a collective nation and as a collective world, not taking anything away from the scale or destruction of this pandemic, the lives that it is affecting, in many cases irreversibly. It continues to be our approach to find positives where we can. This will affect the mental health of all of us. And that's also the thing that we have more control over. So we'll do what we can to stay positive, stay proactive, keep recording this podcast, and that's very much our approach. I wonder if I sound as emotional as I'm feeling.
I feel emotional.
Yeah, but I'm glad to be doing my part in it, and that we're trying to sow hope where we can and use our skills and our resilience to hopefully support that in others.
Yeah, and it also compounds my view and the way that I try and live, and when I'm coaching others, you know, we've only really got this moment, and it can sound a bit fluffy, but so much of our mental illness is attributed to, let me rephrase that.
I think that's true. The past or the future, really.
Absolutely. All over the world is grounded on what may be. And this time, more than any, if we choose to look at it as a worrying thing because we don't know what it's going to be, or as a positive in that in life in general, we never know what's going to happen. And therefore, all we've got is right now. So let's make the most of right now. And that is literally that moment to moment. She mentioned in that work that we'll all have a different perspective. And I just think from a positive, uplifting point of view to end on, in that we can take that and run with it.
Absolutely. And for anyone that thinks you might be being a little bit reductionary there, it's true that even the future, it is controlled by our now. You know, that's the only thing that we can change. We can't literally change the future. We can only change the future via our actions, moment by moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now, perhaps more than I've ever known in our lives, we're being forced to focus on the right now. The future is so uncertain. The past feels further away and more alien from our current world than ever. And so we've got day to day, we've got what we can build now, including routines, which we'll be talking about in great depth. Did you like that segue?
Yeah.
So we'll talk all about routines and how they can support our mental health in a moment. But first, who's our sponsor? Let's find out. So we are back, and just before we get into talking all about routines, Danielle, how are things going for you since last week?
Well, first of all, happy Easter.
Yeah.
Did you have an Easter egg?
I did. I'd already eaten it, so yeah, I didn't have an Easter egg on Easter. But one thing you might find entertaining is I kind of virtually did. My family, particularly my dad, was talking about having a virtual Easter egg hunt.
Oh.
And I, as you might imagine, was kind of cynical of this. Of like, I don't know about this, guys. I mean, do I want to see the chocolate if I can't eat the chocolate? That's
That was your only reservation, was it?
The whole thing felt a bit twee, in a not cute way. But actually, No, it was quite funny. So basically, we all arranged, and I made sure to get my aunt in on this as well. So we'd arranged for her from Edinburgh and my parents and my sister from here in Birmingham. We all arranged to get on a FaceTime call after they'd had lunch. And so we did that. And right from the get-go, it was quite silly because they all wanted to have their own device to be part of the call. So me and my aunt are obviously separate, whereas the other three were all in one place, and yet they came through on two different videos. And then my sister and then my mum and my dad in separate parts of the house. And then my mum and my dad didn't like the fact that they were sharing a screen. They wanted one for each of their faces. So then at one point my dad went off somewhere else, but you could still hear him in the background.
Can I just cut in at this point and say, you know, without judgment, this Easter egg hunt that was arranged, there are no children involved. This is an adult-only Easter egg hunt, I take it.
Yeah, so I grew up with my dad hiding Easter eggs in the garden and me and my sister being sent to run and find them and it being very competitive. And so we still did that through, like, grumpy teenagehood of, like, oh, an Easter egg hunt, and then as soon as he says go, we like sprint anyway. Like, we'll be cynical as we want, but we want the chocolate. So this is the first time we've done it virtually, so we then, through much digital maneuvering, managed to get it so my sister and I were paired up and my mum and my aunt were paired up, so the member that was there would go around showing the garden to the person that wasn't to help them find eggs. I don't think I was very helpful because between the like screen delay and the blurriness, there wasn't anything I wasn't seeing before my sister saw it. But we still won. We still found more. So,
oh my God.
I'd rather be with her than against her when it comes to egg finding.
Not heard of that. I've not heard of anybody doing a virtual Easter egg hunt. That is creative. I mean, I have never done an Easter egg hunt. Let's just put this in perspective. Bobby's face has just changed, by the way. This looks like his mouth has just dropped. But I've never done an Easter egg hunt, which is hilarious in itself. So now I've got two daughters, but I mean, we didn't do one, but a lot of my friends did. But to think that there are adults doing virtual Easter egg hunts is like on another level. Like, I'm like, what? But it's cute. That's a nice little thing.
It was funny. I did definitely get into it. Sadly, I don't have any of the eggs, but I'm sure my sister will enjoy them on my behalf.
You have. You had chocolate at home, though, I guess.
I mean, I'd already eaten all my chocolate, but yes, in theory, I had chocolate. In practice, it had already gone. But no, it was quite fun. And it was actually strangely emotional. That was the first time we were all speaking together, even if it was distanced. The last time that my parents, my sister, my aunt and me were all in one room even was probably Christmas.
Wow.
And of course, you know, it could hardly be more different than where we are right now and all that's going on. And of course, three of the five of us are medical. My sister's university is closed. I'm doing this podcast. So it could hardly feel closer to home, really, for us as a group. Mm. And yet we're all spread out.
So, and as you guys do family group chats in general, how did you find it? Like, this has even brought you guys together in that way, like digitally. I know there was an aim, which was Easter egg hunting, but like, how was it in general to kind of, is it something you think you'd do again? Just to check in with each other, like, in a couple of weeks?
There's no need for me to make a decision because I will be expected to partake in more.
Good.
It was nice. It was nice to see them all. I don't even know why it surprised me, but it was a kind of pleasant surprise to see my parents' place and my aunt's place and feel reassured by that familiarity.
Yeah.
I don't even have a way to explain it, just seeing the background of places that I know.
I know.
In a time where I feel very distanced from a lot of familiar spaces.
Yeah, that's a good point that I've not actually thought about, but it does feel reassuring and nice, actually, when you and I Skype every Monday and I see you know, your headphones and your microphone and think, I'd normally be sat there and the windowsill, and then obviously Milan comes creeping by and like, you're right, it's comforting. Or if I'm on FaceTime with my mum and I see, you know, a dog or just a settee, or, you know, it is quite comforting actually, just to see those things are still there, still as they were when you left them.
Yeah. And as a more general update on how I am, I think I'm reaching very much the point you were at last week, where, you know, I'm getting into the routine, I'm getting used to the changes, but the changes are really hitting me. Like, the novelty is kind of worn off. They're getting busy and distracted by the planning and the adapting, and instead it's like, oh no, this is my life now. And the missing seeing people in person has really got to me this last week.
Has it?
Yeah, that's been really, really hard. And something that I didn't see coming was that I've really missed being around male energy. It's a weird thing to describe, but I live with a human female and a cat female. And I think it just dawned on me this week that I haven't been in the same room as any other guys for weeks, if not a month.
Wow.
It's not something that I really thought about until I was like, yeah, maybe that's part of why I'm feeling lonely.
Yeah.
Because that's a whole category of human to miss.
Wow, that's so interesting. And I guess without genderizing, is that a word?
No, but I like it.
Yeah, me too. No, but like, you know, with your male friends, do you find that you have better connections with them in person than you would say on the telephone? I know you're a good phoner anyway, but I'm just wondering, when you were talking then, I was thinking, I know I've got two daughters and Anthony's
I can answer your question.
Okay, go on.
I think you've really hit the nail on the head there, actually. I think it's maybe harder for me to feel connected to male friends. Yeah, over phone. I certainly think I seem to get less information from them. Like,
yeah.
You know, I think as men, we universally can feel a lot of this man up pressure to push emotions down. And so maybe in person, I can pick up on how they're really feeling, or I can see how they look. And I guess things they twitch at when I ask them certain questions, you know, I can pick up signals in a way that I can't, particularly over the phone. And yeah. So maybe I feel that I don't really know how my male friends are doing. But then also, I guess, you find reassurance from different people in different ways. And perhaps the reassurance I feel from males in my life is more of them as a presence, that they're this kind of other sizable person, perhaps physically reassuring. And there's more kind of physical looking after they do for me, like offering to carry things and opening doors and things. And it's not a weakness on my half, it's just a way that as guys we're kind of encouraged to show care in a physical way, whereas women are perhaps encouraged to show care more verbally. And so maybe that's what I'm missing.
Interesting.
I think you've really helped me understand that. Thank you. One of the things to come on to talking about routines that I'm trying to do to feel better is schedule things to look forward to. Because of course I look forward to recording with you. And this, as I've said, is one of the few parts of my routine that hasn't changed. So I'm clinging to this. I think you've probably seen it in my face when you suggested, oh, we could just record a different day. And I'm like, no.
Yes.
No, let me have one thing stay the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, so another thing I'm trying to schedule in more is speaking to people. That I found right now, while I'm feeling perhaps more emotionally vulnerable and isolated, it's a much better approach for me to schedule in speaking to people and say, okay, can we speak tomorrow at this time? And then I, A, have something to look forward to, but B, it's a lot more certain. It's a lot less likely that I'm going to be let down. Whereas the alternative is I pick up my phone when I have a free minute, and then I scroll through and I start calling people, and, you know, maybe one or two of them don't pick up because they're busy or they're on the phone someone else.
Yeah.
There's a disappointment there. So I've definitely found that scheduling in to see people is helpful, because what I'm not doing is going for meals with people. I don't have meetings as much as I usually would. So I have a lot less to look forward to. And so trying to replace that is really helping.
it's been really weird because some people have been like, well, it's the Easter holidays now, so the kids don't really need to do any work. I'm taking that pressure off, as normally they'd be off for 2 weeks, really easy going. And I found it really hard having a week without, with them being at home, and it's been having a bit of a free-for-all. It's harder. Even though I was homeschooling, it's not 9 till 3:15, strict, strict. It's really flexible, but we might do a bit of English and a bit of maths, or a bit of art, a bit of science, a bit of PE within a routine of the day. And then when you kind of 3:30, maybe 4:30, because we don't probably start till 10-ish, comes in, it's kind of then time to switch off, and everybody then just enjoys hanging out and being a family, and the girls are quite happy to play together. When they're playing all day and all night together, they're pissed off, they're bored. All of us as a family, I've really sensed this week that we've a bit had enough of each other. Like, we're not arguing. It's not too intense in that way. But I feel like everybody's suddenly got a bit bored. And I'm wondering whether or not that's also because we've not had a routine in place. And then your mind wanders, and then you get agitated and irritable, you know?
I think when you lose that structure, it can be really difficult not to get anxious about the news or start feeling aimless, I guess, is my version of that.
Yeah.
I've really been trying to be tough and gentle with myself. So tough as in, we still need some structure here for your mental health. So yeah. As difficult as it is, and as much as my sleep has kind of got shot to hell right now, I am really trying to enforce a bedtime for myself. Am I meeting it? No. Some days I'm not tired, and that's probably that I'm not doing as much, or I'm not being active and being outside. Other days, my mind is wearing, or I feel hyper because probably, again, I've not used up my energy. But I'm really trying to still at least be in bed, even if I'm not asleep, to try and force that structure, because otherwise night just blends into day.
Yeah.
You feel aimless. Everything is kind of stretching out forever, and you can't help but stress about when this will all be over. And of course, the last thing I want to be doing right now is losing sleep.
You said then night turns into day, even having some routine around a weekday and a weekend, because even that's starting to become a little bit blurry. What day is it? You know, a Sunday could be a Wednesday. And again, this last week, it's all gone just hazy and blurry, which is ironic that that has then caused me more stress, aimlessness, boredom than it had having the routine that others may have said, oh, the pressure of homeschooling, trying to work at home. It's not been pressure, unless you make it pressure yourself. It's actually been a way of getting through this, having a routine. And then when it comes to a weekend and it's a Friday night, the kids can stay up a bit later. I will open a bottle of wine or another two. You know, we might have a bit of shit food and enjoy a bit of a Friday night special. You know, Saturday night, we've been going on Zoom with the girls, having a cocktail, a drink, listening to music, things that you would do at weekends, or that I would do at weekends. And then Sunday, lying in, you know, every day we were getting up, you know, at 9-ish, maybe 8:30, 9 with the kids, and making sure we get dressed before we go down like we would for school and stuff like that. And then at weekends, no, you can be in your pyjamas and you can chill out till 10:30. And, you know, we will watch Jhené's The Harriet. Got to throw that in. He's done a Caribbean-like tour with food from around the Caribbean, and he cracks me up anyway. Is his last name Harriet? Ainsley. Do you know Ainsley?
No.
You might not even know him. It's crazy that you don't even know Ainsley.
I'm sorry.
No, you're not sorry. You're just not old. Ainsley is a chef, a black chef. I bet you'd know his face. He's
probably
quite flamboyant. He's really flamboyant anyway. And he just like cooking stuff. And he's been really fun. And we've enjoyed like watching like 3 back-to-back episodes, Caribbean's where we're from. So that's been cool as well. But like in bed till 11 in the morning. But imagine if you just did that every day, like with no structure. You just all get a bit loose.
Yeah, the novelty very quickly, very quickly wanes. And that's another area I've been strict with myself on. I'm still getting dressed every day.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm getting dressed later, or maybe I'm getting changed for bed earlier, but I'm still making sure to be dressed at some point in the day.
Yeah.
And, you know, getting out for my daily exercise, not putting off going to the shop, because I think for a lot of people, it could be quite easy to feel guilty around going outside.
I know.
The measures are to be taken seriously, but they're not to beat yourself up with. And I have heard that from people in my own life, and particularly those with certain mental illnesses, where I'm concerned they could start getting agoraphobic, that outside has been demonized so much right now. we are rightfully scared of the spread of this virus, but we shouldn't be scared of going outside when following those guidelines and staying safe as best we can. I 100% think it's vital to our health, really, which is hard to say when there's so many people that are being asked to self-isolate completely for 12 weeks. You know, so that's a whole proportion of our population that aren't getting that. But even if you open a window, you know, I think there's so much good for us just having the outside air.
Same. I say hello to all my neighbours. There's always the same, again, with routine, the same man over the road is in his garden every day. The same lady up the road walks the dog just round the block. But I love that, going by people and just saying hi. And as you carry on walking, you know, people are just so up for that and saying hello. But yeah, I know what you mean. Do I really enjoy going outside and being with people? And I'm, you know, missing that, but I'm outside every single day just because that feels as close to me living my life as I normally would, like being out there and seeing cars and people and colours and smells. And
I think it's vital. And as long as you're following the rules, you need to 100% be thinking about your mental health as well, that it's not just about catching the virus or not. There's so much from a mental health perspective. Only this week I came across some of the content that Hope Virgo, a past guest on the podcast, has been sharing, particularly within having an eating disorder, and was sharing how she's been finding it really hard not to feel guilty buying certain foods.
Right.
So, you know, certain foods that she feels more comfortable eating may also be things that are essential items. And therefore, she's worrying about, if I buy this, am I then going to be taking that away from someone, depriving someone of that? And of course, that's quite a consistent narrative when it comes to eating disorders, that you can find excuses not to eat. And that's so dangerous right now, that she could easily find excuses not to go out, not to buy food, and instead just kind of live off last bits of food she could find at home and actually end up restricting quite easily.
Wow, that's serious. Because she mentioned actually something, I think it was last week, the other way, same principle, but over-exercising, having an eating disorder and wanting to burn calories, don't take it as an excuse to say, well, I've got to exercise, I can't go out, I can't do anything, so therefore I'm going to quadruple my amount of exercise every day.
That is a danger for many conditions, that the additional free time we may have and space to sit in home and reflect may give rise to these symptoms and unhealthy coping mechanisms. And again, so much of this does come back to routine. I'm well documented on the show talking about work and keeping busy, and that's a way that I feel productive and helps battle my depression symptoms. That it's more difficult to have a depressive outlook when your reality is completely opposite. You know, it's harder to beat myself up and think these negative thoughts when I've actually been really productive and I'm achieving loads. That is going to build my self-worth, build my resilience, all of these things. So, of course, the podcast we're continuing with, we're putting out the bonus episodes and getting really good feedback for those. There'll be things in the life of every listener that they can potentially put more attention to. Are the things that you've been putting off that now you can do? Maybe you can create a routine around that. For me, I've been reading before bed more often, A, because it distracts my brain and is a way to kind of check out from COVID thoughts and check into a story and a time when this wasn't happening. You know, even if it's nonfiction, it's still separate to what's going on right now. And you know what? I'm reading a lot more because I'm putting that in my routine. So maybe there's ways that we can create routine out of all kinds of productive things that we would never otherwise prioritize.
Yeah, and actually, it's you saying that, you're right. Maybe even breaking out of your routine, actually, and turning it on its head is also helpful, because you may get into a negative routine.
Yeah.
Even something as small as, we've been really checking in with loads of like box sets and Netflix stuff and Amazon Prime, and everybody's sharing what they're watching. And we tend to go towards like police dramas and thrillers and quite dark stuff. And me and my friends a couple of days ago were saying, has anyone got any light-hearted shit? Because this is just, it's been great because they, you know, they're gripping. Same as the books that I read. They're all detective homicide mysteries and stuff like that. And last night we did a quiz, me and Anthony, with some friends, which was hilarious online. But then he was like, let's watch Homeland. We watch that every Sunday. Oh, it's Homeland time. And I just thought, no, I don't want to. I'm in a great vibe. We've had such a laugh. We've had a couple of drinks. I just want to watch something that's just lighthearted and just break that Sunday night routine that we sit down and watch Homeland. And it's about terrorism and CIA and all the rest of it. So we watch basketball, which we love as well. And then we watched like an NBA game and we were whooping and cheering. I was like, oh my God, really got into it. It was so much better than the norm. You know, watching something else and doing something different, breaking out of a routine, especially if that routine could be bringing you down.
I think what we're really hitting on here is how this can all be an opportunity. We have the option right now to reflect, to step back from our lives. Well, yeah. In many ways, we're being forced to step back from our lives. You'll naturally reassess when that happens. And so as much as possible, I'm trying to find proactive way to do that. So rather than look at all the things I'm missing out on, of course I feel that I miss so many elements of my routine and my work that I just can't do right now. But where I'm choosing to focus is how can I be proactive with that? What parts of my routine don't I miss? Oh, I'm glad I don't have to do that. Or I'm glad I feel less pressure to reply to emails quickly right now, because we all get that there's a lot going on. There's a lot of adapting happening. And are there maybe parts of my routine and my life that don't serve me and that should go in the bin? And when everything starts to get back to normal, they never return.
Yes, there are. No, you're right. Great reflection. You're absolutely right. It's the opportunity, isn't it?
I thought you were going to start listing things that I should get rid of. Yeah, so you should get rid of this and Milan's in the way. So, you know, do you really need a cat? You're not taking my cat away from me.
Never. No, but you're right, Bobby. It's time to reflect. But the one thing I will say, because I can say it to you without judgment, and the listeners can, I guess, judge me if they want, because I'm judging myself. But for being totally honest, you know, the one thing that has been really hard this last few days is, you know, and I feel so guilty to say it, but I feel really bored. And it's because I've filled, like you said at the beginning, my life with, I've been cleaning out cupboards, I've been homeschooling, I've been busy, busy, busy. And then I keep thinking, right, you know, next week I'll get back onto work, really get into what, you know, planning the future for work and what this is going to look like and that, and never feeling like I've got the time to do it. Then the energy, but the boredom is set in, but I feel really guilty for saying that. And that'll only be a thought. I'll move through that soon, but you know, I'm just like a bit fed up.
I think that's really fair to acknowledge, though. I've been feeling the same, perhaps to a lesser extent, but maybe it'll come for me too. Because I think so much of our busyness is reliant on social pressure. Being around other people that are busy, 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 nonstop. And, you know, the pressure of people chasing us up for things on email and expecting quick responses and social media needing to be updated. And right now, a lot of that pressure has just fallen away. And that can be quite scary to look at elements of your life and think, I don't want to do that. Did I not enjoy that the whole time? And I just did it because I felt obligated to. You know, thank God that I love the podcast so much, because I'm just as excited to do this as ever. In fact, probably more so, because it's swelled to be a bigger part of my focus right now. But it has made me think about certain other things I do and wonder, was I ever enjoying that? And so I guess in a way the boredom is a privilege. That's a sign that you do still have some comfort in your life and you're not under immediate health threat. And so actually I think if listeners are feeling bored, that's probably from a mental health perspective quite good. You know, bored is better than scared right now.
Our different perspectives are the fact that I've got two children here and you haven't. So it's really tricky the guilt that comes in and that, you know, maybe affects my mental health is that you think, well, if you didn't have the children here, which again, you wouldn't ever think that you don't want them here, there's so much more I'd be able to do. But again, a lot of that's thought because there are people who are living without children who are also feeling bored and also fed up with stuff to do. You know, I'd love to have 8 hours a day to be able to learn and go on online learning and to plan my future. But any moment that I've got, I'm trying to occupy the kids. However, I thought that and then I suddenly thought, well, no, Dan, because they go to bed at 8 o'clock and instead of maybe putting on Netflix and TV that you've been doing for the last 3 weeks, they're 8 till 10, do something different. That's my time.
And you probably wouldn't sit down for 8 hours anyway. We'd all struggle to be that stringent. And in many ways, I think we have an advantage that we're used to a certain amount of working from home, just getting on with it, thinking, okay, I don't really have to do that right now, but the consequence is this person's going to be let down if I start it late and can't get it finished in time. So we have to find ways to motivate ourselves anyway. And equally, they're probably quite helpful for giving you a structure. You know, I know there's only so long I can sleep in for before Milan starts crying the house down, being like, where are my humans?
Oh.
You know, and it's not a food thing because she'll still have food in her bowl.
Really?
Yeah, she's very, very self-regulating. She doesn't really have meals, but then she doesn't put on any weight. So that is a sign of a cat that is so comfortable that she's never known what hunger is. She's just like,
oh, wow.
Like, so she
misses you. It's not the food that she's calling for in the mornings.
Exactly. It's a company. And actually, she's probably had a routine that's been least affected. You know, if we're staying up late, she still gets into her basket at 11 p.m. And goes to sleep. Yeah, whether we're in her way and still in the living room or not. And then she's still getting up at the same sort of time. And then there's only so long she can wait before she's then upset that we're not with her.
Aww, pets are affected. We spoke about that, didn't we, last week?
Yeah, so who knows how unstructured my life would be right now. You know, I might even be nocturnal by now if it wasn't for her.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there's the knock-on effects of that. You know, you're getting less vitamin D because you're awake when it's dark. You might not be going out as much. All of this comes back to mental health.
It does. And I tell you what, speaking about children, the other end of the spectrum that really made me think as well when we're talking about routine is my friend's grandmother, and she's my best friend. So her grandmother's been like a second grandmother to me. She's 97 and she now lives in a care home. And I actually was quite surprised that this only happened last week. I don't know what they've been doing, but they now have got strict guidelines that they can't come out of their individual rooms. Again, she's privileged and fortunate that she's in an amazing care home. It's gorgeous, like a hotel. But she's now been at 97 when she's confused and doesn't really know what's going on, that she's now just in her room all day. She doesn't see anybody else except for somebody coming and giving her meals to protect the other patients and to protect the staff. And I called her. She's, again, lucky enough that she's got her phone in her room, and she was really confused and really sad and lonely and just didn't know what was going on. And I just thought, you know, there's the children. And then the other end of the spectrum is all our elderly people, and their routines must be completely messed up.
For sure. So I think it's just one of those things we've got to be grateful where we can be.
Yeah.
Grand. All right. So we will wrap up there. Thank you again. I always thank my guests. I feel I should thank you as well. Thank you for being part of my routines.
Same here. Really enjoying it. So please keep listening. We, you know, feel privileged, don't we, Bobby, that we could get to have this opportunity and, you know, might be a comfort or bring a bit of joy or whatever it might be, just a bit of consistency to our listeners. So everybody stay safe.
Yeah.
Until Monday, till next time.
Well, until next Thursday.
Well, yeah.
Thursday for the listeners. Very true. And if you want a silly thing to round up on, here's a fun achievement for the listeners: is you are tuning into COVID-19 Essential Listening, according to Apple Podcasts, because we are currently featured with them. So if you've not found us through there, then surprise, you are listening to one of the best bits of coverage around COVID-19 and mental health. Voila.
Yay.
All right. And we'll wrap up there then. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.